or guest suggestions, reach us by email at fcateng@sfu.ca. All links in the show notes.
This is Rabble Radio, recorded on Friday, August 9th, 2024. I'm your host, Brianne Doyle. Thanks so much for tuning in. Rabble's got its finger on the beat of the issues that matter to you. If you're curious about the latest news in Canadian politics, labor, environment, or social justice, you've come to the right place. This is news for the rest of us, free of corporate influence. In January last year, Rabble's parliamentary reporter Carl Nirenberg shared a piece calling on Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and federal NDP leader Jagmeet Singh to revive the idea of electoral reform for Canada. And on the podcast, he joined Riel Laverne, former president of Fair Vote Canada, to dissect Canada's current voting system and discuss how a fairer way to vote might be accomplished in the future. Today, we're revisiting the topic of proportional representation and electoral reform. Next year is an election year in Canada, and with a decline in popularity for the current Liberal Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, and with far-right extremism on the rise and apparently influencing certain Conservative leaders across the country, many Canadians are already wondering how they might cast their vote. Joining us on Rabble Radio this week is Ted Craig, a spokesperson for Fair Vote Canada. He joins Rabble editor Nick Seabrook. Here is that conversation. Take a listen.
Ted, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
So I guess to start, if you could tell me a little bit about yourself and how you came to be involved with Fair Vote Canada.
Well, I'm a grassroots volunteer like pretty much everybody in Fair Vote Canada. And we all kind of come to it through our own ways, their own moments. I started thinking about electoral reform, a good 20 years ago, when I realized that when you think about all the issues that we care about, especially progressive ideas, how are those decisions and policies made? It's really, and who makes those decisions? It's the politicians, it's the people we elect. How are they got there? It's because of the voting system. And the voting system clearly wasn't very fair and accessible to everybody. So that got me involved. I'm originally from Ontario. In 2009, I was living in Vancouver, and I helped out a bit with the provincial electoral referendum that year. But then in 2014, I moved to the Ottawa area and really got quite involved. I was the chapter president of Fair Vote Canada for a couple of years. And it was a tremendous opportunity to meet a lot of politicians and really talk to some people face-to-face about these ideas. And then I've moved away from Ottawa the last couple of years, but I'm still a spokesperson and still quite involved with the organization.
And for our listeners who may not be familiar with Fair Vote, tell us a little bit about the organization, its history, and what it aims to achieve.
Mm-hmm. Well, we advocate changing and reforming the electoral system in Canada to some sort of proportional representation, which is key. It's not really just electoral reform or maybe ballot reform, but really it is some sort of proportional representation, which makes all the difference in terms of making the kind of concrete change and meaningful change that we're looking for. So Fair Vote goes back to, I believe, the late 90s or so, early 2000s, when there was enough kind of momentum and interest to organize into something, an organization that could lobby and advocate. And we do this largely the federal level and the provincial level, occasionally municipal, but it's mostly the provincial and federal levels that we concentrate our action. And there's grassroots chapters, as I say, all across the country.
Now, let's first talk about our current electoral system, first past the post. Anyone who's gone out to vote is probably familiar with it. You have a riding, you have one elected representative for that riding, and when election time rolls around, you're given a ballot with a list of candidates, and the candidate who gets the most votes wins. Simple, right? So yeah. If you could tell me a little bit about what is the problem with our current electoral system?
Well, in a nutshell, the problem is that the person who wins a seat, if we look at it at the riding level, the person who wins a seat rarely wins that seat with more than 50% of the total votes, because we have a multi-party system and there could easily be 4, 5, 8 candidates. So the vote, of course, is going to be split and divided. And unless one party is particularly popular in a certain riding, which can happen, but the vast majority of our ridings across the country, and again, the provincial level too, they're won as, you know, votes are split and someone wins a seat with maybe 35, 40% of the vote, it can easily be in the 20s. So we behave as if the person who wins the seat certainly won a majority and is expressing the wish of the voters, but it's nowhere near, in most cases, a majority of the people who voted that voted for the person who won, because the vote is split and the voting system is not designed to accommodate that. It's designed for a two-party system because it was founded in the 19th century when there were only two parties basically in Canada, and that goes back to Great Britain where our system comes from. It simply hasn't been modernized, but we behave as if, you know, it's just a modern system and that's how it's supposed to work, but democratically it doesn't really make any sense.
And from a voter perspective, do you feel that it sort of diminishes investment and engagement in the political process? You know, because even if you do have just two candidates, if I vote for the candidate who doesn't win, do I still feel like I'm being represented and my views are being heard in the electoral process?
Well, if in theory there was a two-party system, yeah, there might be a little more of kind of a history of, say, the other side reaching out to the people that didn't vote for them. But I mean, any politician will tell you that, of course, I represent everybody in my riding. And, you know, maybe they're legally or essentially expected to abide by that. But talk to any voter who says, well, I didn't vote for that person. They're, especially with the more kind of extreme, the left and the right that we have these days, someone who didn't vote for their representative, do they really feel that that person is listening to them? Or are they really going to be listening to the people who voted for them, of course, and they're going to turn out to vote for them the next time? So, for sure, it's a question of representation and kind of authentic representation. And again, we assume that people are going to behave in a certain way that's respectful to all voters and so on. But if we have these partisan divides and the system doesn't accommodate it, of course, voters are going to be cynical. And that's what's happened. You could say it goes back decades, I think, especially the last 10, 15, maybe 20 years. People are tuned out. They're frustrated. They're tired of voting strategically. They want to vote for someone instead of against someone. So they vote for the third party to keep the party they really don't want to get in. All this kind of strategic thinking that kind of twists your logic, and people just fed up. And we see the voting rates down to around 60%, and provincially can be much lower. By-elections are like 30%. So it's no wonder people are just fed up. They're tuning out.
You mentioned that First Past the Post is an advent or a relic even from the 19th century. We're seeing outside of North America, in Europe and in, you know, Central Asia and the Middle East, where they aren't using First Past the Post. France has, you know, a multi-day process. So is Canada kind of holding on to an archaic system? Is First Past the Post kind of on a trend of on its way out?
Well, we'd like to believe that for sure. It's interesting. Canada is the only, let's say, major developed Western country that still uses first past the post at all of its various levels of jurisdiction, so federally, provincially, and essentially municipally. Even the United States has some different types of systems. In the United Kingdom, when you think about Wales and Scotland, when they devolved their parliament, when they set up those parliaments around 20 years ago, they didn't choose to use first past the post. They used a form of proportional representation. And any of the democracies in Europe that were born or revamped after the Second World War, same thing. They chose PR, the kind of newer countries in, you name it, Africa, Asia, South America. So countries don't choose first past the post if they're setting up a democracy. They know how fractured it's going to make the system and the electorate. So, yeah, we are kind of trailing behind. And, of course, we'd like to think that, I guess, our civil society, our kind of political culture would recognize that and say, hey, it's time to modernize. But, you know, who's going to make the changes to that system? At the end of the day, it's the politicians who are going to cast that vote. And we've really learned over the years that it's very hard to ask a politician to change the system that got them elected there in the first place.
Absolutely. So then let's get into what Fair Vote Canada is proposing. What would a proportional representation system as Fair Vote Canada envisions would look like in Canada?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we get the question all the time. And one of the challenges in this campaign is that it's quickly easy to get into the weeds and the details and, you know, what a ballot would look like and how mathematical kind of calculations work. I've learned to really break it down as this. Imagine that instead of electing one representative, you're electing two, maybe more. But as long as you're voting for two people to represent you, then there's a far better chance of getting as accurate proportionality between the voting, the popular vote, and the number of seats that a party gets. So there are different systems and ways to do that. You can have multi-member systems. You can have take, say, a group of ridings and turn, say, three ridings with one representative each into one larger riding with three representatives. Same number of politicians, but people in that riding can now choose who they want to go to advocate for them. And when they go to vote, they're electing more than one person. They're electing three different people. So that gives them more choice. And the mathematical side of it is that it works out that a popular vote, if a party wins, you know, 35% of the votes, they're going to get roughly 35% of the seats. So on the very tangible level, that's the difference between a proportional representation type system and first past the post. You simply have multiple representatives to represent you and that you're voting for.
Now, a criticism I've heard in the past of proportional representation is that elected representatives might be less connected to their voting constituents, that, you know, first past the post, you know who your MP is, you know who to go to if you have a problem. What do you say to that kind of criticism? Is there a bit of a disconnect between a constituent and his elected representative under proportional representation?
Well, not if we get the systems that Fair Vote Canada advocates for, and this is what makes it particularly interesting in the Canadian perspective, because we're such a large country, or even if you take it basically at the provincial level, that, you know, we're going to have A, large ridings, and B, we're going to have the difference between these rural ridings that are sparsely populated and, of course, very urban, dense urban ridings. So any system in Canada has to be designed for Canada. We can't copy the system in Finland or something, or in a small country, even New Zealand. They have their own systems. We need to design our own. And that means that any system we come up with has to accommodate that level of local representation, which we absolutely advocate for keeping. We still want to have the local MPs. What you might do is then add a regional MP. Or sure, you may have larger ridings, but as I say, you have a choice of different MPs to go to. And they're not going to be these extremely large ridings, half the size of a province or anything like that. So it really comes down to designing custom-made systems for the province, for Canada federally, that makes sense, because we have to have, for sure, that local connection. But it's definitely doable.
What some people see as a weakness in first past the post, one of many, is that it encourages what they call strategic voting, and which helps to reinforce a two-party system. We've only really ever had conservatives and liberals at the federal level in Canada. Would proportional representation sort of eliminate that problem of strategic voting?
It would virtually eliminate it. I'd hesitate to guarantee 100%, but it's pretty close. And it's so empowering as a result, because you don't go to the ballot box thinking, well, I know who I'd love to vote for, but they have no chance of winning. So I know who I really don't like, and I'm going to vote for whoever compromise candidate is who has a better chance of winning, to make sure the person I really don't like doesn't get in. And again, this is how our brains kind of have to twist this thing around, so we vote strategically. So under a system of PR, because you have the choice, you can, and whether it's a type of ballot or not, I mean, we hear a lot about ranked ballots, for instance. Now, ranked ballots in and of themselves are okay, where you have a list of the ballot and there's a list of names and you rank 1, 2, 3, etc. That works, again, if you're electing more than one person to represent you. If it's still with the system we basically have right now, where you're only electing that one representative, it kind of exacerbates the divide, and it really leads to more of a two-party system, because who's going to win that seat? It's the parties that are most to the centrist. The parties that are maybe more to the left or to the right, they may get a few first votes, first choices, but those choices are not going to trickle over to the second and third round of counting and so on. It's going to be the centrist type parties that win, which is what we saw in France, actually, not too long ago. So if you have multiple representatives that you're voting for, then it spreads out those choices. And people go into the ballot box, they can still vote for their conscience, they can vote for who they want, and there's a much better chance the person they vote for is going to win. It doesn't guarantee, of course, that the person you love is going to win, but they have a much better chance.
Yes, and I'm glad you brought up France, because it did recently have an election that was very interesting. France has multiple days of voting. On their first day of voting, it looked like a fairly extreme far-right party was going to win a majority in their legislature. So I guess my question would be, does proportional representation lend itself to seeing maybe more extremist views in government?
Well, it's first off, that starts with the way the system designed. Now, one thing you often hear about is what's called a threshold. So let's say it's 5%. A party needs to win at least 5% of the popular vote to basically qualify for a seat. Mm-hmm. And any proportional representation system, aside from an outlier like Israel, has that kind of a baseline. So that makes it really hard for any kind of fringe party to win, say, one or two seats and somehow carry the balance of power. It takes quite a bit to actually get 5% of a popular vote. Now, the next thing is that, yeah, if a populist party, extreme left or right, you know, does win a few seats, well, they may have 15 or 18% or something of the seats. But either they have to work with the coalition and moderate their views in order to get into that coalition of government, or the larger parties are going to say, we don't want anything to do with these guys because they're so extreme. And so that kind of fringe party gets to sit at the back of the house and doesn't really have a lot of influence. But here's the real salient point, I think, is that under our current system, let's call it extreme. I'm not trying to point out left or right. It could be any angle, is that a fringe element, let's say, can take over the an existing established party under the guise of, you know, we're here to bring about our ideas and that we're not as threatening as they might be otherwise. They take over that existing party under our current system, and they get all the mechanisms to that party. They get the name, they get the logo, the branding, they get the reputation and the history. So when people go to vote for that party, they think they're voting for maybe the historic party that they're used to. In fact, they're voting for quite a different party. And I'm not just talking about Canada. I mean, this could happen in the UK and absolutely in the United States is what we've seen with the Republican Party. Just think about that, how people have taken over the Republicans. And your old school kind of grandfather's Republicans, right, are much different now from what they were back in the 1980s or 90s even. So this is what happens under first past the post, because they can take over that party. And when they win an election, first past the post, they may be 30%, 35% of the seats. They could get a majority government and get 100% of the power.
Now, you mentioned Israel earlier. I'm glad you brought that up, because often when we hear criticisms of people proposing proportional representation, the critics will point at Israel and say, look mm-hmm. at how often they have elections there. Look at the deadlock. They always need a coalition to govern. And it brings in extremists into the government, as we've seen. So can you maybe respond to those criticisms? Would what Fair Vote Canada is proposing, yeah. would that be like Israel?
Well, we get this question all the time, of course, and I'm glad we do, because it gives us the chance to highlight the differences. Israel does not have ridings. It's kind of a unitary type country. Well, part of it is because it's so small. So, I mean, they could have more local representation, but the country is so small as it is. So they don't break it down into individual ridings. The threshold there I was talking about to get elected in Israel is around 3%, maybe a bit less. So it's much easier for those single issue fringe parties. They may only run like three or four candidates or something, but they have a better chance of winning a seat. And when you look at the makeup of the Knesset, the parliament, I mean, there's something like 20 different parties, technically, and some of them only have one or two representatives. It's pretty hard to forge coalition, therefore, as a result. And, of course, you get all these extreme fringe elements. So that's nothing compared to Canada, where we're such a large country, as we talked about. That's a big reason why we emphasize the local connection, and that we have to have our local representatives keep our ridings, at least in some shape or form, so that we have that connection. And how do you make a large country like Canada work democratically with the representation, right? It's got to be a system that responds to that, which would be completely different from what you see in Israel. And there's another final point here, which whether it's Israel or any country, there's the political culture that's involved as well. And, you know, any country that kind of fosters extremists, again, left or right, whatever it is, I mean, good luck to any voting system to keep them out of the way completely. They're going to find a way in. You need a voting system that can accommodate that. And our current system allows for those fringe elements, as I say, to take over established parties and then get 100% of the power if they win a false majority.
Now, electoral reform in Canada is not a new idea. It's been something that the current prime minister, in his very first electoral victory, promised that he would do back in 2015, chose not to do. And, you know, now we're coming up 10 years later on another election in 2025. So just looking on back on that promise that Trudeau made 10 years ago, what do you think about the failure to deliver on that? And what do you think can be done to reform Canada's electoral system before the next election?
Well, for starters, as it emerged that Trudeau and the Liberal Party, what they were proposing back then was not proportional representation. And he was quite clear about that. He never said he wanted to bring in proportional representation. He wanted to get rid of first past the post. Mm-hmm. In their mind, that meant that they would change the ballot to a ranked ballot. And that's what I was talking about earlier, where instead of checking one person, scratching off one box, you rank the candidates on a ballot. Again, that comes back to who's going to win a seat. It's the most kind of compromise centrist candidate. And what's historically the party in Canada that's the most kind of centrist and, you know, final option? It's the Liberal Party. So obviously it would have benefited them. It would have anything to do with proportionality at all. In fact, they would have got even more seats compared to the popular vote, as you see it in the polls. So, I mean, if that was a system that they wanted to bring in, well, we didn't want to see that either. So you could say, in a sense, we were glad that it didn't get through. Of course, we're very disappointed that that was the end of it. He could have had more, the party in general could have had more openness and could have said, well, we could compromise and, you know, come up with some other alternatives here. But they weren't interested and they shut the process down. I've given Trudeau credit, at least the last almost 10 years now, 8-10 years, for starting the conversation. Because before he brought in that promise, and it was people were talking about it, especially back at the time, ever since we hear people talk about it and ask, well, what happened? Why did he break that promise? And it's given us a chance to talk about PR. And if he hadn't done that, you know, maybe we wouldn't have been having nearly as many conversations as we've had the last few years. So that really brings it into the next election, is trying to keep the conversation going. And our latest effort has been to promote the idea of a citizens' assembly. So this comes back to the bias of the politicians. How do you ask someone to change the job, to change the system that got them elected, right? I mean, they are going to cast that vote and make that decision at the end of the day. But can we take as much of the bias and influence out of their hands as possible? And the best way to do that is an impartial citizens assembly of average, everyday voters, citizens, just like you and I, kind of randomly chosen, agree to participate in the process, and they get together and they learn about different options and systems around the world, but then, of course, what would apply to Canada, and make a recommendation for the best voting system going forward. They could recommend first past the post. We're pretty confident that when they see the options, and of course in 2024, 5 and beyond, what's going to be best for Canada, it's some form of proportional representation. With that kind of pressure and kind of credibility to the whole, that adds to the whole process here, it'd be hard for politicians to just ignore it and sweep something like that under the rug. I think the Citizens Assembly and its outcome would create a lot more momentum. So we're pushing for that. We're hoping, we need the parties to establish it in Parliament.
All right, excellent. And Ted, if someone wants to get involved with the issue of electoral reform with the Citizens Assembly that you've just brought up, what's the best way they can do that?
We're waiting for them to establish a Citizens Assembly. So in a sense, it's a two-part question, because if one is established, it depends how they do it. People could maybe state their interest in participating. It could be a random draw. Now, if you're talking about how to lobby and talk to politicians and our own representatives about supporting this idea, well, that's the best thing you can do. You can call up your local MP, you can write letters. And, you know, I've really learned over the last few years that when I've talked to MPs and they say, my constituents call me, they write to me, they go out of their way, you wouldn't believe it maybe, but they listen. They really do listen. They say that stuff, like, we notice when people do that. So it's worth it. You may think you're only one person making one phone call, one meeting. That stuff really adds up over time, the more people do it. And then, of course, the last thing is if you live in a city where we have a Fair Vote Canada chapter, you're welcome to get involved or start your own very, very grassroots organization. And people can really take their own initiative to keep this momentum going.
Well, Ted, thank you so much for joining me and talking about this important issue. It's something that I feel like we'll still be following for as we go forward to the upcoming election. And thank you very much.
Thanks. It's been a pleasure.
That was Ted Craig, a spokesperson for Fair Vote Canada, and Rabble editor Nick Seabrook in conversation. Thanks so much for that, Ted and Nick. Switching gears now, let's review the top stories of Rabble.ca in a segment we like to call In Case You Missed It. And for that, we'll turn things back over to Rabble editor Nick Seabrook. Back to you, Nick.
Thanks, Brianne. This week in national news, the federal NDP is proposing a plan to ban rent evictions nationwide. Rent evictions are when landlords evict tenants under the pretext of renovating their property, but it is often abused by greedy landlords to drastically raise rents. Some municipalities, like Hamilton, Ontario, have begun to introduce restrictions on rent evictions. Earlier this year, Hamilton passed a bylaw that would require landlords to file an application for construction on a property within 7 days of issuing an eviction notice with the intention to renovate. Landlords would also be required to find comparable accommodations for their evicted tenants during the course of the renovation or pay them compensation. The NDP is proposing financial incentives to municipalities across Canada to encourage them to implement similar restrictions. In labor news, unions are expressing frustration with the federal government over delays in implementing pay equity plans. In 2021, the federal government enacted the Pay Equity Act to ensure equity in pay among federal employees. Unions representing federal employees, such as the Public Service Alliance of Canada and Unifor, state that some federal employers are dragging their feet over implementing these plans, while others are doing so without union consultation. Unifor President Lana Payne was especially critical. According to Payne, as of July 31st of this year, she is aware of only 6 employers who have posted a draft plan. Of those 6, 3 have concluded that no pay adjustments are required. All federally regulated employers are supposed to have a pay equity plan in place by September 3rd of this year. And finally, in his latest column for Rabble.ca, Ole Henriksen states that rather than control and sustainability, the future of humanity's relationship with Mother Earth must shift towards evolution and survivability on our part. This is what University of Toronto professor Danielle Brooks and his colleague Salvatore Agosta argue in their new book, Surviving the Anthropocene, A Darwinian Guide. They explain that economists and politicians perpetuate the illusion that growth can solve all of our economic challenges. Instead, Brooks and Agosta argue that we should shift towards focusing on adapting to the changing environment and protecting ourselves from the worst consequences of climate change. As always, you can read the full stories that we talked about today on Rabble.ca.
In 2024, many indie news media organizations are making the hard decision to close up shop. But with your support, Rabble.ca can continue to share news for the rest of us for years to come. Support Rabble during our summer fundraiser with a one-time or monthly donation. It's never too late to become a Rabble Rouser.
And that's it for Rabble Radio this week. Thanks as always for tuning in. If you like the show, please consider subscribing to Rabble Radio on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and now on YouTube. And please rate, review, share Rabble Radio with your friends. It takes 2 seconds to support independent media like Rabble. If you have feedback for the show, ideas, stories, opinions you'd like us to cover, we'd love to hear about it. Get in touch with us anytime at editor@rabble.ca. Thank you to all the journalists and writers who contributed to this week's content on Rabble.ca, and thank you to Carl Nirenberg for supplying the music. Lastly, thank you to you for tuning in to Rabble Radio. I'm Brianne Doyle, and I'll talk to you next week.